Lorry nodded briefly in understanding. Len had pointed out the thin grass-like leaves multiplying along the shallow waters near the shores, fist-sized pods just beginning to rise above the surface. Snow lilies bloomed twice every Lalonde year. They looked beautiful, but they caused havoc with the boats. In fact, Len Buchanan had opened up considerably once the trip started. He still didn't like the idea of Lorry and Darcy steering his precious boat, but had grudgingly come to admit they could manage it almost as well as himself. He seemed to enjoy having someone to talk to other than his wife. He and Gail hadn't shared 10 words since they cast off from Dunningham. His conversation was mostly about river lore and the way Lalonde was developing. He had no interest in the Confederation. Some of the information was useful to her when she took the wheel. He seemed surprised by the way she remembered it all. The only time he'd gone sullen on her was when she told him her age. He thought it was some kind of poor-taste joke. She looked about half as old as he did. The three of them watched the paddle boat race past. Len turned the wheel a couple of points, giving it a wide passage. Darcy switched his retinal implants up to full resolution and studied the deck. There were about 35 people milling about on the foredeck. Farmer types, the men with thick beards, women with sun-ripened faces, all in clothes made from local cloth. They paid very little attention to the Coogan, apparently intent on the river ahead. Len shook his head, a mystified expression in place. "That ain't right. The Broadmoor ought to be in a convoy, 3 or more. That's the way them paddlers always travel. Captain didn't call us on the radio, neither." He tapped the short-range radio block beside the forward sweep mass detector. "Boats always talk out here. Ain't so much traffic as you can ignore each other." "And those weren't colonists on the deck," Darcy said. The Coogan pitched up hard as the prow reached the first of the deep furrows of water which the wayward Broadmoor produced in its wake. "Not going down river, no," Len said. "Refugees," Lorry suggested. "Possibly," Darcy said. "But if the situation is that bad, why weren't there more of them?" He replayed the memory of the paddle boat. It was the third they had encountered in 20 hours. The other two had steamed past in the dark. The attitude of the people on deck bothered him. They just stood there, not talking, not clustered together the way people usually did for companionship. They even seemed immune to the rain. "Are you thinking the same as me?" Lorry asked. She conjured up an image of the reptile people from Latins call, and she superimposed them on the deck of the Broadmoor, rain running off their green skin without wetting it. "Yes," he said, "it's possible. Probable, in fact. Some kind of sequestration is obviously involved, and these people on board weren't behaving normally." "If boats are carrying the sequestrated downriver, it would mean that the posse on the Swithland have been circumvented." "I never expected them to be anything other than a token, and a rather pathetic one at that. If this is a Xenoch invasion, then obviously they will want to subdue the entire planet. The Judith tributaries are the only feasible transport routes. Naturally, they would use the riverboats." "I can't believe that anyone with the technology to cross interstellar space would then be reduced to using wooden boats to get about on a planet."
"Human settlers do," Darcy projected an ironic moo.
"Yes, colonists who can't afford anything better, but a military conquest force?"
"Point taken, but there's an awful lot about this situation we don't understand. For a start, why invade Lalonde?"
"True, but to return to the immediate, if we've already penetrated the incursion front, do we need to go on?"
"I don't know. We need information."
"We have an asset in the next village. I suggest we stop there and see what he knows."
"Good idea. And Solanke will have to be informed about the aberrant river traffic."
Lorry left Darcy to feed the furnace hopper and made her way back to the space in the cabin they shared. She pulled her backpack from under the cot and retrieved the palm-sized slate-gray communication block from among her clothes. It took a couple of seconds for the Confederation Navy's Eland satellite to lock on to the scrambled channel. Kelvin Solanke's tired-looking face appeared on the front of the slim rectangular unit.
"We may have a problem," she said.
One more won't make any difference. This one might.